Okay, it looks like we have triumphed in the application. Now, introducing Tobias is a great pleasure for me because in the year 2000, I went to the Frankfurt Book Fair at the invitation of Stefan Barkowiak, and I brought my books in a couple of high-impact yellow suitcases and, you know, took a taxi over to a place I'd never been before. And I had a great hope in my heart, really, which was that I would get to meet some fellow artists and maybe sell a book or two. And the first time I was allowed out of my booth, someone said that that I could go. I went running across the book fair to another building where I had heard of this woman, Roswitha Quadflieg, who has a great reputation preceding her in San Francisco because her books had been collected at San Francisco Public Library. And I stopped in for a minute and, you know, looked at her books, and then I turned around and there was Tobias's booth right exactly across the hall from Roswitha, and he was showing his books, and so I just quietly went over and started watching. And I realized suddenly that I was in the presence of a young and very, very strong artist, a person who, you know, I really wanted to know more about. So I, in 2005, I got back to Frankfurt, and this time without a booth so that I could spend all my time looking at the works of art and meeting the people. And the first person I went to meet was Tobias, because I had, in this five-year-long memory of looking, watching him show a couple of his books, but we have none of his books in the collections here at Berkeley, and so they may have had them over at Stanford, but maybe not. You know, so I couldn't see his work. So there, I sat down and asked to look at his work, and I was utterly amazed because he had produced a series of books that seemed to travel the world, and at the same time that they traveled the world, they were incredibly sensual devices. That's one of the things that I admire the most about Tobias's work, is the way he can bring his mind into a sensual presence. And his books are really a feast to the hand and the eye, as well as to the mind. So, you know, that get down to these obvious, you know, facts, so you know a fact or two about him. It turns out that he had studied painting in Venice with Vedova. Vedova is a very famous painter. In fact, we visited him just before he died last year, or 2 years ago, and with Peter Seltz and his wife. Some of us know Peter, who's an eminence grise here in art history. He's, Tobias studied painting with Emilio Vedova and design with Ennio Ciggio at the Accademia di Belle Arti di Venezia, where he finished his diploma in 1987. He continued his studies at the University of Venice, Ca' Foscari, University of Venezia, Ca' Foscari, Department of Oriental Languages. Beyond his formal study, his most important teacher, this is in his own words, really, and I think it must be true, is his experience in daily life in other countries, and especially his travels in China and Japan. Circus work and working in different typographic and artistic print shops completes his list of influences. And I mean to question him a little closer after this fair about his circus work. In 1988, he founded the CTL Pressa, and in 1996, he started his first collaboration with other artists in his Edizioni CTL. In 2000, he joined the newly founded group of book artists 13 Plus, which has happily come to California already, and so some of us have seen some of his work. He not only works on artist books, but also in the traditional medium of black and white photography. His silver gelatin prints on various prepared papers have been used in books produced in collaboration with Stephen Kohler and have been shown in numerous exhibitions in Europe and the United States. Tobias lives in Hamburg, Germany, where he is has his printing studio. He recently had a show at the very prestigious library, the Marciana, in Venice, where he had a solo exhibition. So let's welcome Tobias.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Peter. Peter asked me to present just one book, and I think that's a wonderful idea. And I decided to present the last one, which is the most recent one, which is called Onni Santi, which means All Saints. And All Saints has different meanings, like all the saints, they exist. And on the other hand, the All Saints Day, where we think at our ancestors. But the other meaning is that we don't really think a lot about saints in these times. And I like in my book to have another part of our life that we usually don't see, that we usually don't think about. So I have another working title for my book, and this is called This World Is Not Enough. So, I mean, beyond everything we see, beyond every action, beyond every material, there's a counterpart, another world, there's something else we cannot see, can only see if we have got an artistic inspiration or whatever kind of inspiration. And in conjunction, that goes very much in conjunction with Peter Koch, who are on this codex, I think, and that I have to thank him very much, because he doesn't do only his work on books, but he found this other side of something and started an event that is so great and so important. And I think this is the event with the best visitors of the whole world I've ever been to. And that has to be done only if you have a kind of artistic access to what things are. So you will see in my book, which is here, I prefer usually to show a book to somebody which is close to me, so I can see in its reaction which page has to be turned or not. And as you see, my English is not as fluent as all these people have been doing here before, but I try my best. And this book, for this book, all began in Georgia. And I didn't go to Georgia to make books. I didn't go there to get new inspiration or everything. I just went there for a wedding. And I tried to find the right button here now to make it sound. No sound? Technical guy. Most sound, maximum sound. This is sound?
Oh, now we have to connect.
Go ahead. Maximum. Okay, this is maximum. Go.
Thank you.
You arrive in a place which is really different. You will see the church that has three open doors during the wedding. And people come in, people go out. People try to sell you candles while you are there. The priest is coming along and telling, I should make photographs. And so I had no photo machine, so I took my cellular one and tried to get the instructions how to photograph, and there was a film coming out. This church is... This music and all this is kind of one part of all this parties we had there in a country which is on the other side very poor. And my friends there were working in the Vatican, and so they are very interested in churches. And we had a 1 week tour to tour the Georgian churches. And you must know, Georgia is one of the first Christian cultures. And they did as well invent the making of the wine, and they liked church parties and drink. But they love their history, and they have an enormous variety of churches in all sizes and all forms. And we had this driver and driving us around with his church specialists for 1 week. I was used to travel Italy and France and all these kind of countries with beautiful churches. And then we go very enthusiastic in a place, and you come in a black hole, and it's like entering an ashtray. And I thought, well, they're talking about so much, and I was kind of, there's no icon on the wall, there's nothing, there's just black all over, and it's broken down by parts. And I was asking why does it's like this, and they told me there's no icons for several reasons in these churches, because the history is very old. It starts kind of 500 that they built most of these churches, 500 AD, so it's 1500 years old. And then there has been 16 incursions of Persians and Muslim country people. They don't like to see icons with faces, so they took away the faces of the saints, they took away the images of the churches. Then there has been, of course, USSR time, when they stored their agrarian stuff, and or weapons, or they shoot inside, or they painted some of them white just to have a nice place for tourists. And of course, some icons were stolen as well. And there's another thing in the 12th century, the Orthodox Church, which is Orthodox there, they decided to build an iconostasy in on every church, which is kind of a wall in between the people, the praying people, and the altar where the priest is. For me, it was ununderstandable, because I think, why should they divide the space? And in the place where the people are praying, there's no image, and the place where this priest is, he takes all these images. And I said, well, this is not nice, but how can you get into a religious feeling there? And they said, oh no, this is the best we have, because we are just very humble persons, and we pray to the priest, and he's a professional, and he prays, he goes. And so they sometimes, for them, it's enough to have a piece of newspaper put somewhere with a saint on it, or to have a poster, which is for us incredible, to put some awful things there in the church. But it's like this. And the thing was that these people came into the church and prayed. My father is priest, and I'm used to it, and I think it's very good and important, but I've never seen so many people really praying as I saw there. They're coming in and kissing the wall and kissing the floor and praying there with a high intensity, and I felt really this decadent Western guy coming to see touristy things, and just on the other hand, there were these people really need the other side. They really need the other, the hope of the other side of this world to go on living, because often they earn just kind of $40 a month, but lots of products have the half of price we have here, and so the life is very hard. And they go in the churches and pray, and I felt really a bad guy to say, well, where's my Botticelli, where's my Giotto here, it's all gone, and all that. And so I was touring with my friends, and since not only the specialists in church know a lot about church, but every single visitor, usually there, a Georgian person, knows a lot about history. And so whenever a Georgian met another in front of a church, they were talking like an hour about churches, about a monk in 1259 come there and founded this, and then he did this. And since I didn't understand one word, I was just going around to make my observations in these places. Or in one church, then the theme for this book on the Sunday was born, because I was looking at the walls, and they were kind of black by candle smoke, as all this black is from. And it was looking so aesthetic for me in the moment. And I was getting my photo machine there and said, well, I will take a photo of that. And then a young guy was coming and saying, no photo. And I said, why no photo? Well, there's no reason. No photo. Maybe he wanted to sell me something. I don't know why. And as I'm kind of taught an Italian living style, I found a reason to make photos. I just told him, well, I'm from the European community. I have to wash the walls here, because in case we need to restore them, we know how they are. And so he gave me the right to make the photos. And that, and the other, so I did something wrong in a way. And that was the reason I had to do something with it. And so I started to make photographs of walls and churches in Georgia where people were praying in front of. But I noticed, because now I have really to look which one is a good one, which one is not the good one, how they are. And I noticed that they are much more beautiful than some of the icons. And since the people are there lighting the candles and with the maximum of honesty, of naturality, of need, they are there to pray. And during the prayer, the wall is getting painted. And it's even, I think, it's much more related to the spiritual than some painter. Just, please make me one Sant'Agnino. And these people are really in need of it. And so when the wall is painted with this smoke, it is kind of this art which Josef Beuys liked so much, because it's real. It's a real moment of life. And so for the title of this show, you had a very good title. I don't of this speak. I don't remember which other title you made. But it is like this, that these...
Discovering the inexisting icons of saints in Georgia.
Yeah, discovering the inexistence. That's it. Exactly. For me, it is
discovering the inexisting icons, the missing ones, or the missing ones.
And so, this is the word I was going to decide in this moment, that I have to go back. When I come back to Germany, I will do this. But before I have to say something, I love a lot that Emily has been here before, because she was talking about rhythm. And rhythm is indeed so important for work. For not for work, but for a book, of course, it's a maximum. And I wanted to say some words as well about rhythm, but I'm more romantic, I'm not so... I cannot say all this polyrhythmic things. And I just say, if you have an idea of a book, you get started. It's not enough to have an idea. You have a long process in front of you. And sometimes you get stuck. But if you organize yourself, you have to get a good rhythm in work, you will get over this. And the book itself, it has a very strong rhythm, you will see later. And I studied Far Eastern religions because I wanted to find out as well about rituals and all this. Like when you have shamanic people, they need a rhythm to get contact to the other side. Like even in our churches, what is very much not known about for us as public, these things the priests are doing are very regular. It's just a formal thing, but it's kind of a rhythm. It's kind of what gets doing it again and again, the relation to the other side of the world or to other sides of the world. And all the things you do with a rhythm, you get the chance to grasp something different, to grasp something, some other meaning of the things, to get more strength. And this is one. And then, of course, you have to listen to what is there and to touch the things and all this. For me, for my books, usually I like to use different materials. As he said, I'm working with photography, but on Chinese paper. I have been working with glass and silk and wood and metals and things. And this is rhythm, and these materials are for me important in getting another level in the production of a book. And when I was in Georgia, I decided for this book only three things. I want to print it as an etching, because as I know from Till Werkles, who is showing his books here as well, and of course from Rembrandt and other people, in the etching you have the most beautiful blacks, which is really like a smoky black. And I don't have a really experience with etchings, but I'm a little like Americans, I don't fear to go into new things, never. And since I want to make photography, I know from Till Werkles that is kind of a dying technique because you need some materials and other. I didn't even think to start with this, but develop my own experience, my own technique to get there. And the other thing was I want to have the walls quite big in this book, because you have to feel really to be in front of this world situation. And the third thing, I wanted to finish the book the 1st November, which is All Saints Day, which was 3 months later. That was too much. Okay, but I presented it then, because 1 year before exactly was dying where Emilio Villabama, the painter guy I was studying. And then I appeared in Till's studio in Hamburg and told him I would like to be instructed a little to print something. But now we will have a look at the book. Technique, please. Maybe. I don't know. This one. Open all. Oop. No. And then just play. I think it's like this.
Preview, yes.
And then just
slideshow.
Stop it. Okay, stopped.
Okay.
This is the Georgian alphabet. They don't have even an only language. They have an own alphabet. Which for us looks very decorative. And of course I use it. I've been using 14 different languages and lots of alphabets in my books, and I love this, and I love even if you don't understand what is written, because you're looking at other things and during your going through the book. is very soft. No? So this is Georgia. Just maybe somebody doesn't know what I'm talking about. It's a country, it's close to Russia, and it's on the border to Chechnya and to Turkey, Azerbaijan, where the oil is going, all pipes are going through. And just maybe you see here in this part where it is in the world, in the middle of the east. Try to get on. Oh, no, this is not the right technique. Sorry. It was meant to be played with another computer, but we didn't have the plug.
They're out of order?
They're exactly out of order.
If you right-click on one of the pictures, and it'll, by name.
Yep. I don't know, it's my name. Yeah, maybe it's my name. Okay, it sounds better. Yeah, yeah, much better. Stop it. Yes.
Yeah, just use the arrow.
Okay. Things, so, no, back. So, sorry. This is in Tbilisi, in the main street, in the center, or one minute from the main street. Where usually in our places we have Prada and all these big shops, and they have some of these nice places still. And you find there some shops only with images from saints as well. You go in and you have all these small and bigger and larger of all these saints they like. And just to say, it has not yet arrived completely our traditional view of center cities. This is a very typical church of Georgia, and whenever you see a church style like this, you know it's Georgian. And this small on the side, it's another small chapel, and you have often different chapels close to. But this is no wrong. Sorry, technical.
Put the arrow on the screen.
I
just want you to relax for a second, but we will have to end in about 5 minutes.
It's just the end. There's no problem. It's just a few things.
This is the wrong order?
Exactly. This is... Well, I do the order like this, but it's not very... sorry. But go ahead for... This is one of these churches where you see the signs of the candles on the side. This is one of you see they destroyed all these faces of the reliefs and this is one of my walls where that is in the book. Another. And here you see it can remain informal painting. Remember you to informal painting. That's really close to Vidova. And another. This is the most important thing I have to tell you before I'm closing in this thing. The rhythm in the book that starts, this is a church plan. And you have always these church plans starts with a different choreography than the walls, and what's going on? It starts with a very simple church plan and goes to more complicated church plans, and in the middle you have always the walls where you see how the people are praying, situation where they are when they are praying, and then there's a double page with the church plan, which is kind of the idea of the architect to link our earth life to the spiritual. You have a ground floor is a square or rectangular, so we have it here. And you have a dome upstairs, so you have our life is kind of to be organized to survive, to do our cultural possibilities, And you have upstairs, you have the dome, which is the perfection of the spiritual. But these alternates always with the walls where we are thrown back to the street for our daily fight for existence. And here's another architect who says, well, we will do a beautiful thing, very complicated, with this Greek cross and my magnificent, beautiful dome. And then there's again the wall where you are. And another thing, every image has its counterpart in a negative. Usually you don't see it in the book that is the same image with a negative. Only with one you see it really. And this is the idea of like the Egyptians, when they had the pyramids built, that was the part of the earth life on the ground, and the power lines go up in the heaven or in the sky, and there you have the life of the spirits or of the other part that we cannot see when we are living. And this is the same with the negative. But in this book you don't know where you are. You're on the negative or you're on the positive. And we never know, are we dead now or not? Are we not dead? Yeah, like the Buddhist people, they say when they are born, this is my death. And when they go away, they say, now I will be born. It's not so far away. Now we see one more Baroque thing, and I will end now. This is the last church on the right side, which has a small antecamera. And this is the highest church I found in Georgia, right in the middle of the mountains, where the snow is and the cold wind cannot enter. See here. And this is the last saint is St. John, who wrote the Apocalypse. And he has this kind of tunnel to see the light, and this is the last thing in the book and for our life probably on earth. And you see the double side. And it stops, like Gabriel Garcia Marquez's 100 years solitude. It begins very simple and it ends very simple. And I added just one perfect church plan in the end, and you close it, and its cover is made with French handmade paper and wax. That's it. It's etchings. I put the photos in this type. I made this normal film photographs, and I projected them on large films. And then I made them digitalize, just I scanned, and then I made them as hard as possible to have just black and white film. And then I put them on polymer. And I printed the etching from the polymer. Yeah. This is a good thing to do, I can recommend. This is big fun. Like when I came to my professional professor Till Werkers, he told me not to use more than 50%, otherwise you will just have a hole there in there. And I had a lot of big holes in there. But I've been happy with this afterwards because it's my style. It's okay. So you just see it. There's more ink. Maybe you need a half a year to dry it, but... something in? Anything else?
Okay, well, no. Of course we want to come and see the book.
Yeah,
that's at his booth, right? We'll all be there. There'll be a line. Okay, thanks. Now, we're going to...
Okay.
Not more than 5 minutes.